Welcome to Scouts Out, an original science fiction story by A.A. Foringer, set in his Outfitters universe. All of the Outfitters universe stories are available in ebook format at smashwords.com. If you would like to support the author or read the story for yourself, please buy the book at smashwords.com.
Chapter 20, 2 August, 2151. Leo leaned against the bulkhead, sipping the first hot beverage he'd had in 16 days. He sighed as the hot tea went down his throat, feeling it warm his insides as the mug warmed his hands, musing that while watching Star Trek growing up, he had never seen Captain Kirk so much as even don a sweater, let alone wear gloves. But Leo had been wearing gloves for the last 16 days. He finished the mug and put it down on the lip of the window, looking around. He wondered how much longer he was going to have to wait. Not that he minded. Any excuse to get off the line was as good as another. And besides, with the replicator still out of whack, there was no hot food to be found on board, except for the occasional sandwich that came out too hot to handle and burnt to a crisp. To say the crew was on edge would be an understatement. No communications with other ships unless it was mission essential. Level 4 energy levels imposed at all times, with 3 and 2 being imposed quite frequently, from either the fleet commander or squadron commander. No hot food for 16 days, and no hot showers for double that time. The crew being on 2 shifts, with the officers being on extended shifts, and the sharks out for 16-hour cruises. The men were worn out, and Leo with them. In fact, if he was honest with himself, he might be worse off than them. Heck, he had almost bitten off Yoshi's head for telling him to lighten up, when Leo reprimanded Gonzales for not keeping the men on their maintenance schedules. Then this last mission. It was bad enough that the Lion had been doing patrolling for 8 months straight, the first 3 being extended forward recon for the fleet's movement, bringing the entire fleet to defensive line Wolf that the Admiral had laid out on the 3rd night after the awakening. Then 4 months spent doing extensive patrols to the front and rear of the defensive line to ensure the area was secure, so construction on the defensive alignment posturing could begin. Those months had been tiring. It seemed that every time they turned around while out on patrol, they ran into another fleet ship. This was absolutely nerve-wracking. There was not any shift that went by the crew was not bounced out of bed with a contact alert. Everyone would climb into either their positions or one of their alternate positions and man them for an hour or so until the contact was confirmed to be friendly. Then there had been this last mission that sent them far to the rear of the fleet. Not to recon new territory or check for possible alien contacts, but to map gas clouds and possible mining sites. The Lion had to fly to and into or land on a list of potential mining areas and do all the geological and elemental surveys. This had gone on until the last gas cloud was targeted, and the Lion had gone into it to gather some samplings. Then chaos broke loose. One of the sampling ports had gathered a negatively charged mass of gas. Then the sample had been scanned with a contact scanner. This had sent the charge into the ship, which had led to an almost total cascade of system failures. If the sharks had not been close by, and if the tractor beam had gone out with the rest of the affected systems, then the Lion might have still been in that cloud. After being towed out of the cloud, the damage was assessed. Larry had to be taken offline for 3 days, and Winchester had to be plugged into him to assist in rebuilding his systems, thus knocking him out of service as well. One of the heavy repair droids had to be rewired due to being in a charging bay when the blowout occurred. Then the replicators and heating systems had a terminal case of blown circuits and programming flaws. Leo and the crew had to wear sub-zero clothing for the first 6 days, and almost every one of them had to have frostnip treated at least once by the auto dock. So now they were back with the fleet and coupled into the large mining ship, and Leo was ready to hand his report over to the mining commander. Normally, Leo could have transmitted the information in a quick burst over to him via comm channel, but there's still a fleet-wide communications blackout, and except for landing and coupling codes, the fleet was silent. Leo grabbed the large mug again, walked over to the replicator slot the yeoman had said he could use. When Leo entered the room initially, there had been 9 other recon captains, only one of which he knew, C.J. Mallory, captain of Long Range Recon Ship 13, and formerly, as Leo recalled from the first time they met, a police officer from South Africa. Leo had stood next to the man, and they had shared the words. Not that they were friends. Heck, Leo did not really know that much about him. But they were from the same squadron, and that was enough to make them hang together for a few minutes. They talked for a short while, Leo learned CJ's ship was called the Black Cat. In accordance with the supposedly unlucky number 13 the ship was stuck with in the numbering system. CJ had complimented Leo on his kepe, and Leo asked if CJ's headgear was comfortable and or functional. Captain Mallory was wearing a Middle Eastern desert headpiece made from black cloth with a recon insignia embroidered in one of the corners. CJ took it off and held it up as if to examine it. Functional and comfortable. Although, I really did not like the look of it at first. It did start to grow on me, and the buggers in my crew voted it in. And who am I to stand in the way of democracy? So I let it be. Besides, it comes in handy in situations like on Baron. Leo nodded, and the conversation lagged slightly, and they both got something more to drink, alternating between staring out the window and making conversation. During the time, the other captains got called into the next room. Soon it got down to just the two of them. CJ had been called in about 10 minutes ago, and from what Leo had observed so far, each meeting had taken anywhere from 5 minutes to 20 minutes. Not long to wait now, he thought to himself. The tea was pretty good, mixed with the right amount of honey, but strong and dark. Leo felt the warm mug and realized he did not need to wear his gloves on this ship. Its heating system was working fine. He put the mug down on the closest table and pulled off his thin leather gloves, stuffing them in his vest pocket. He then went into the bathroom that was located adjacent to the conference room and relieved himself. Walking over to the sink, he caught a glimpse in the mirror and was surprised at what he saw. Not that he had forgotten what he looked like. It just seemed like a really long time since he objectively viewed himself in a strange mirror. In front of him stood a man with a couple days' growth of beard and long dark blonde hair pulled back into a ponytail, wearing a kepe with the marks of the fleet recon captain. His face was weary with new lines and a bit of dirt, with large dark circles under his eyes. His neck was ringed with a thick, flat black bandana that hadn't been seen a washing with soap and water in a month. He was wearing a long-sleeved, insulated black sweater, few snags, and smudge marks. Over the top of the shirt was his very comfortable and very utilitarian vest, made from a leather-like material that was tough and, from what Leo had experienced, almost rip-proof. Containing numerous pouches where Leo kept his miniature binoculars, spare pieces for his comlink, another bandana, some small tools, and most recently added, his leather gloves. Around his waist, he was wearing a large belt that held a large bayonet on the right side and his large magnum blaster in the cross-draw position on his left. Attached to the belt in the rear was a pouch for Leo's comm panel, and next to that, the base unit for his comlink. Leo was wearing black duty trousers, dirty also, that tucked inside his boots, which were black with black laces, and very comfortable, even though the boots covered Leo's ankles and went about halfway up his calves. Leo had learned to trust everything he was wearing and carrying. The boots had stopped the nasty spike from doing some damage to the bottom of his foot on jungle. The spare bandana had been used to gag an Larian robot guard back on Baron. And the shirt, well, it was one of the most warmest garments Leo had ever owned. Leo thought back to the first time he had put on the uniform. God, it had been such a long time ago. At least it seemed that way. But in actuality, it had only been a year and a couple months. Captain Grant, a voice called out from the doorway. Leo shook his head, bringing himself out of the memories. Yeah, I'm coming. Leo dried his hands on a nearby towel and walked back into the conference room. The same yeoman who had told him he could use the replicator was standing near the door to the ship's captain. Captain Grant, the commander will see you now. Thanks, Leo answered and strode towards the door the yeoman was motioning towards. The door slid open and Leo entered the room. It was an office with a large desk secured to the floor and several chairs bolted down as well. Sitting behind the desk was Captain Clark. Leo had met the mining captain once before, but that was in a room full of people when he had first been given the survey mission. The captain was sitting behind his desk, looking over multiple screens, making annotations on screens and occasionally barking orders into his comlink, which was resting on the table at the time. Leo looked the man over for a minute, not wanting to disturb him. Senior Captain Clark was one of the few people Leo had met that wore a beard in the fleet. And what a beard it was. It matched the hair on top of his head. Exactly. Both were dark red, and both were curly. The commander was tall and powerfully built, but not overly muscular. Just wiry. He was wearing the typical duty uniform of the fleet, black collared shirt, black utility pants, but with cowboy boots. Also, the man was doing something which Leo had seen even more infrequently. The man was smoking a big, thick cigar. Not that smoking wasn't allowed on the ships. In fact, Leo hadn't heard any rules limiting any type of voluntary, self-destructive behavior. But smoking was rare for a couple of reasons. First, you had to replicate it. And replicating tobacco was hard because, according to Logan Packer, the stuff was hard to manage. And Logan smoked a pipe on occasion. The stuff either came out too damp or too dry, or just wrong. Secondly, it created all kinds of problems with the air refurbishment on board the spacecrafts. And thirdly, the ships were equipped with fire detection devices and would sometimes read the smoke or ignition source as something out of control, and then the alarms would go off. On Leo's ship, he had restricted all smoking to a rear port airlock. There had been a few complaints initially, until Leo made everyone respond to an alarm if smoke was detected in an unauthorized area. After that, no one had complained, and the smokers stayed in the designated areas. Obviously, Senior Captain Clark had done some reprogramming to his ship's environmental systems. Leo gave a low cough from his position near the door. Captain Clark did not even look up. He just motioned for Leo over to a chair in front of the desk, which Leo promptly took. Captain Clark continued to work. He did not look up at Leo once, but motioned that he would be only a few more minutes. Leo relaxed and watched the man he had been gathering information for, and basically working for the last month. When Leo got the call to report to the Star Digger, he immediately asked Larry what the heck the Star Digger was. And Larry, in his customarily efficient manner, had provided all the details. First of all, the fleet had a squadron of support ships made up of engineers, repair techs, doctors, intelligence operatives, research and development staff, salvage techs, miners, and even a farm ship. These ships' jobs were to assist the squadron in tasks that might seem too big or too time-consuming and take time and energy away from the fleet's fighting mission. The mining ship, the Star Digger, was responsible for finding raw materials and converting them to a more usable substance. One of the main substances Leo was sent out to look for was hydrogen. Hydrogen, being the simplest element, could be used for a variety of things. Primarily, it is the most efficient matter that could be changed by a replicator and turned into food or anything else the fleet needed. Other gases could be used as well, but hydrogen was the easiest one to manipulate. When a large pocket of usable material was found, one of two things could happen. Either the Star Digger could move itself into position to mine it, or it could send out small teams in mining shuttles to bring back the material to the ship to be processed. Leo also learned that the mining ship had its own people to do reconnaissance, surveyors. The Star Digger, and more exactly Captain Clark, had other assets as well. Besides there being miners to do deep space gas mining, there were miners to work on asteroids and planet-sized objects. There were refueling shuttle drivers and refinery specialists as well. The man had a full plate, and for the last month he had also had 10 complete long-range reconnaissance ships at his disposal as well. "Well, howdy, Captain Grant. I heard you had a rough time these last 2 weeks." "Well, sir, it really wasn't that bad," Leo said, trying to make light of the hardship. "Don't call me sir. Heck, Grant, I'm only 10 years older than you, you know," the older man said with a big grin that reminded Leo of Packer. "Okay, what do I call you?" Leo said, not feeling as tired as he had a minute ago. "Well, Clark would be fine, but if you ever get to know me pretty well, I'd let you call me Jim. But now then, you and your crew have had a hard time on this last mission. In fact, Grant, you look like you've been rowed hard and put away wet. Have you been getting any sleep lately?" More of a statement than a question. "Well, sir, some, but with the ship being so cold and my computer being shut down, well, it has been hard," Leo said, feeling more tired than he wanted to, but not wanting to complain. "Okay, Grant, since you and your crew have been beating about while working for me, here's what I want you to do. Stay coupled up to the digger for a couple of days. I will send some tech downs to help you out with the damage done to your computer and the other systems. Then I want you and your crew to rest. Heck, you can even run around this ship. Just stay out of everyone's way, and you can have dinner with me tonight." Leo was flabbergasted. The man had no authority to give Leo stand-down orders. That could only be done by Captain De Clooney. Not that Leo was going to argue with the man. He was a senior captain, after all, and outranked Leo. But he had to say something. "That is a great officer, but my orders from Captain De Clooney were to report back to him as soon as my mission for you was complete." Captain Clark turned red in the face quick, like he was going to explode in rage, and his voice came out loud and clear. "Captain Grant, who said your mission for me was over? I have operational control over you and your crew for another week. Until I say otherwise, I own you." Then Leo saw a calm come over the man's face, and he proceeded. "I did send the rest of the recon ships back to their squadrons, but then again none of them got banged up doing work for me like you and yours did. So what I want to know from sending technicians into your ship is how the negatively charged gas can be detected, and how to avoid it for my own people's sake. So don't think that this old wadcatter has given you your address just because he is a nice guy. But that is a nice benefit, wouldn't you agree, Captain?" "Sounds fair to me," Leo said, sounding happy with the logic, knowing that he would have a defense if De Clooney called him. "Okay, what's your commander's name again?" "De Clooney, of the Endurance," Leo answered. "Oh yeah, the Frog. He threw a fit when I called him up a month ago requesting two ships, but he got over it," Clark said, laughing to himself. Well, anyways, let me make a call to my techs, and they can start working on your ship. You can call your men and let them know that as well. Then why don't you and I have some supper? Leo nodded, thinking of hot food and the crew reaction after hearing about the unexpected layover. King to Lion, Leo stated after activating his comlink. Lion here, King, Sergeant Gonzalez said, using Leo's codename the crew had given him a few weeks ago, codename being Commo Officer Gutenberg's recommendation. Lion, prepare for arrival of technical assistance from our upstairs neighbors, and give the rest of the pride the news that we will be standing down in the present location with permission to use the upstairs neighbor's kitchen. Any questions, Lion? None, King. If Merlin or the monkey here have any questions, can they call you via this circuit? Gonzalez was always polite and wanted to know if Merlin, otherwise known as Yoshida, or Monkey, short for the grease monkey, Fia, had any other questions they could call. That is affirmative. Go to NG Level 7 if able. I will be eating dinner upstairs with the head of man of the house. Over. Roger. Anything else, King? Negative, Lion. King out. Leo looked down and realized that Clark was still busy talking, and the voice emanating from the screen he was looking at could only be De Clooney. How long till you're finished with my ship? De Clooney stated concisely. As long as it takes. I suspect a couple days, Clark spat back. I need that ship and those men back. You released the Black Cat about an hour ago, so why not the Lion? De Clooney responded. Well, the cat did a good job. It's just that the Lion did an even better job, and they had some problems. So it'll take a couple days to dig out some of the information out of the data banks, Clark said. My technicians can probably do that faster and more efficiently than your personnel can. So why don't you send Captain Grant and his ship back to the Endurance? Yeah, and have your technicians take their own sweet time digging out the information I need? Well, Captain, I need that information now to complete my mission. And my mission has the direct eyes of the Admiral on it, and your ship is technically mine for the next week anyways. So let it go, okay? As soon as I have what I need, I will send the line back to you, Clark said, starting the sentence angry and then calming down towards the end. Well, I suppose I can spare it for a few more days, De Clooney said, resigned to the fact that he would get the line back before the expected date. Hey, that is great. Let me ask you, De Clooney. I heard you like cigars. Well, I got a great new batch of tobacco growing in my cabin. I will send some with what's-his-name, the captain, Clark said, but with the other hand he was motioning to Leo, okay? Grant, good men, and I will be expecting that tobacco. Let him know that. His crew is a bunch of thieves. Last time they were on my ship, we discovered several spare scanners and tools missing after they left, so tell him that the tobacco is for me so I can get at least some of it. Are they really that bad? Clark said, raising an eyebrow and looking over at Leo, over top the comm screen. Not any worse than any of my other crews, but they do seem to steal things that are harder to replicate than most, such as highly specialized circuits and high-energy tools. Okay, well, get your cigars, Captain De Clooney. Thanks for the scouts. They have been invaluable, and thanks to them, we are ahead of schedule. Clark out. And the circuit was terminated. Clark looked at Leo, and Leo put on his most innocent face he could. Nothing had better come up missing from my ship after you and your crew depart, Grant, or I will hunt you all down and take it out of your hides, the man said in a very menacing tone. Don't worry, it won't. Leo hoped the guys had not already started to fill their pockets, and if they had, he hoped they could remember where they had gotten things so they could return them. Leo had dinner with Captain Clark, who was very informal. Leo had a huge, gargantuan T-bone steak and a baked potato, and he was pretty sure neither of them could exist in nature. The potatoes topped with mounds of sour cream, butter, and bacon. The dinner was delicious. The salad, the huge loaf of sourdough bread smothered with butter, the main course washed down with wonderfully cool milk, and finally, huge pieces of apple pie with mammoth scoops of cinnamon ice cream. Clark talked to his staff as they came into his office for advice. Clark talked to people of his comlink, and Clark talked to Leo. He told him about his days drilling for oil in Texas, and he talked about his days mining for gold in Alaska, and he talked about waking up and finding out how he was the head miner for a fleet sent out to save the Earth. To say the least, Leo was totally entertained by both the man and his mannerisms. Clark would cut his steak into tiny pieces and set some aside on his plate. At the end of the meal, he told Leo this because he was used to feeding his dog from the table. He just could not get over the habit of setting aside some food for Hero, his German shepherd. Clark talked all the way through the pie a la mode, and then some. When dinner was over, they sat down near a window, looked out over the stars, and drank beer. It came up in the conversation about the need the fleet had for so many minerals. Leo admitted his ignorance for why the need was so great. It was like opening a can of worms with Clark, who was privy to all the upper-level staff meetings of the support squadron. The occupation and building of Defensive Line Wolf was going better than expected, due mostly in part to the cannibalistic nature of the engineers and the other support personnel. Before leaving Sanctuary, the technicians had scrapped a good portion of the leftover ships, the ones that were for anyone who wanted to leave the fleet. Well, due to the plundering nature of the engineers and the rest of the support personnel, half the materials needed when the fleet arrived were already constructed upon arrival. When Leo confessed his ignorance of what was needed, he got a quizzical look from Clark. "You mean you don't know what we are building out here?" Clark said, motioning among the stars. No, not really. I know we are setting up defenses, but I don't know what exactly that is," Leo confessed, starting to feel the effects of the 8th bottle of beer. "Boy, Captain DeClooney treats you guys like mushrooms." "Huh? What do you mean?" Leo asked, not following. "He keeps you in the dark." Clark laughed at his own joke for a second, then continued. "Okay, let me explain it to you. As you know, from doing recon, Wolf is not a straight line. More like a giant half-circle, standing on its end in space, with one side being towards Earth, the other side being towards the Horde. And the surface of it is not all flat. It has pits and humps. It meanders along a partial curve, with differing segments being anchored at various star systems." "Yeah, I knew this. This portion we are in right now is sort of the bulge, but close to the center of the line." "Exactly. And as you know, when traveling in space, you need to come out of hyperspace every once in a while to reconfirm your bearings and give your hyperdrive unit a time of deactivation." "Yeah, otherwise your computer could start to lose its central point, and your drive could suffer a meltdown." "Yes, and usually the best place to come out of a hyperdrive is near a gravity well, which means a star system." "Well, technically you could come out in deep space," Leo commented. "Yeah, but what is in deep space worth of any value to come out for? Besides, getting a true fix on a system that is a couple thousand light years away can be tricky, and most starship's commanders won't take that chance." "Yeah, that is pretty true," Leo commented, shuddering inside, thinking about the having the line come out of hyperspace in a void. "So that is where Wolf comes in. You see, we are located about halfway between Earth and the Horde space," Clark said, lining up some empty beer bottles in line with a full one representing Earth and a bunch of empty ones representing the Horde. "Okay, I follow you so far," Leo said, leaning over the couch to get a better look at the layout on the floor in front of him, feeling immediately the effects of the beer he had drank. "So at each of the systems, and I think there are about 15 or so systems, well, the engineers are setting up sensor strings combined with communications relays. Sort of like an early warning system," Leo said, starting to grasp the concept even through the beer buzz. "Exactly. Then after that, we are going to build automated planetary defense systems. So even if we don't have an overwhelming force in a system, the Horde will not be able to go near a planet without getting blown into vacuum." Clark smiled at this. "Then my boys will come in and assist in building large refueling stations that will be heavily armed and tempting targets, but will already be protected by both orbital defenses and planetary weapons. After that will come automated repair stations, manned exclusively by droids, then some automated farming areas where the planet is fertile enough, and then hide sites." Clark made a face at the last part, which showed confusion on Leo's face, so Clark continued. "Which I don't totally agree with, but the Admiral has some fears that if things start to go wrong, we might have to go into a guerrilla warfare type situation, attacking the Horde by hit-or-run tactics, and the hide locations will be places of stockpiled weapons, food, and fuel, and will be totally camouflaged from everything but the most probing extensive scans." Clark shook his head at this. "I don't totally agree with this view of things, but hey, I'm not the Admiral, so I leave it up to him." "Sounds like a decent plan to me," Leo said, not seeing anything wrong with it. "Yeah, well, I guess it is. Heck, we might not even get to build the hide sites. This war may end before any of us sees any real combat," Clark said, sounding more wishful than anything else. "You think it's going to be a bad war?" Leo asked. "Well, first of all, there are no good wars," Clark responded quickly. "That's not what I meant. I meant, do you think we will protect Earth without too much bloodshed on our side?" Leo said, trying to phrase the question better, but feeling as though he wasn't doing a good job. "Yeah, I know what you mean, Leo," Clark said, leaning back in the sofa and putting his feet up. "Well, it depends on a couple factors. First, how fast the people of Earth can mobilize and send us help. The second is how much we are going to piss off the Horde. If we only hurt them one clan at a time and not get the whole Alarian Empire directed at us, then we might have a chance." Leo nodded, not sure if he understood all that was said, but decided to study up more on both the current political situations on Earth and the Alarian Empire. By this time, it was late in the evening, in fact, well past midnight according to the shipboard clock. So Leo decided to turn in for the evening. He said goodnight to Clark and made his way unsteadily to the bottom portion of the ship, where after a bit of searching and bumping around, he found the coupling linked to his ship. Leo wanders to the bridge where he found Fundikowski, who has boots off and his feet encased in warm red wool socks, up on the console while sitting in Moon's seat. Over some of the monitors on the bridge, some sort of war movie was playing. After staring at the screen and listening to the audio for a while, Leo realized it was the film about Gettysburg, a place he had visited a few times with his family. Leo remembered running around the rocks in Devil's Den, rubbing the cannons on Little Round Top, as so many other people had done, until after a summer of continual rubbing by countless people, the cannons were the gold-brassy color it had originally been. The movie's just about up to Pickett's famous charge. "Hey, Fundy, how goes it?" Leo asked, hoping he was not slurring his words. Fundikowski responded by pausing the movie and turning his head and smiling. "Good, Cap. Things are good. We had a whole swarm of technicians down here earlier. They fixed the heat and the replicators, and then they took some circuits that would totally burn out back upstairs." The ranger motioned above them. "To either replace or rebuild them. Then Yoshi had us turn off the lights and go to our cabins and said not to come out until we got a good 8 hours sleep. Then he put us on 1 hour shifts up here, but I got to watching the movie, and I'm already into part of holiday shift. I already went through Flavius's, so I shall just wake him up at the time for his next shift." This happened more than once with the guys, especially the enlisted guys. They looked out for each other. "Okay, I'm sure everybody appreciates you taking the double shift, but you need to rest too, Fundy," Leo said, and after that he realized how much he sounded just like a parent. "Yeah, well, don't worry. As soon as this movie is over, I'm going to wake up Flavius, then he can warm this chair for a while." "All right, I'm going to bed. Good night, Cap, and don't forget to hydrate yourself, or you're going to have a nasty hangover tomorrow," Fundikowski said at Leo's back. "Yeah, yeah, yeah," Leo said as he climbed down the ladder. Chapter 21. The next couple of days were some of the best the crew had probably had since leaving Sanctuary, Leo thought, as they dropped away from the Star Digger and started to use the maneuvering thrusters to clear themselves away from the huge smelting, refinery, and mining ship. There had been only two bad episodes. The first was personal, and the second nerve-wracking, and Leo could still almost feel the first. He had not followed the advice of his ranger and gone straight to bed. He had woken up the next day with a throbbing hangover. In fact, he did not wake up until sometime after 2 o'clock the next afternoon. By the time he had dragged himself out of bed and into the otter dock and gotten rehydrated, the second episode was in full swing. Chief Engineer Fia Tuatelli's fault, really. Whenever they'd hooked up to a ship that had more supplies and was overwhelmingly, in his opinion, overstocked, he made up a shopping list. Then he and his faithful and loyal technician Flavius could go shopping, or as he liked to put it, redistribute the wealth to the less fortunate, mainly the arrogant lion. Leo was aware of this practice and even added a few things to the shopping list at times, but every other time they had either landed on or attached themselves to another ship, it was a member of their squadron, and therefore Leo did not feel too bad about borrowing, but this time it was different. By the time Leo had gotten some breakfast and come back to the land of the living, it was almost 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then, while sitting across the table from Yoshida, who was going over the maintenance reports with his typical efficiency, his first mate mentioned that the chief had gone out shopping. Leo almost choked on his OJ and spilled some of it in the process. "Get them back here, and get them back here now, Larry. Call Chief Fia, and tell them to get back to the ship. Better yet, have him call me," Leo said, as soon as he swallowed the OJ in his mouth and wiped up what had been on his chin and on the table. "Captain Grant, Fia is on board. In fact, he is back in the engineering section right now," Larry explained, suddenly sounding worried. Leo reached across the table and took the comm panel from his very stunned first mate. Leo dialed up the comm panel and gave him a virtual circuit back to the engineer. "Fia here," the chief said, answering the call. "Chief, how much stuff have you gotten on your trips up top?" Leo said hurriedly. "Well, me and Flavius made 3 trips today, and shopping was very good. I got almost everything I needed. In fact, I did some impulse shopping and got some..." "Stop. I don't want to hear it. In fact, I don't even want to see it. It never existed on the ship. In fact, it is going back, starting right now," Leo said, hoping that things had not been missed yet. "Hey, Leo, we need this stuff. You know that de Clooney would never give us half this equipment or parts," the big Simone said, pleading. "Yeah, and if this stuff is reported missing, the next couple of days of R&R are gone. I don't care how you do it, or if it takes the entire crew. I want those materials returned, and I want them returned before anyone goes to sleep tonight. Got it, Chief? Leo said, clearly, slowly, and forcefully. Yeah, well, you put it that way, but we really did need that. Leo held up a finger and muted the comm screen until his chief noticed the finger and stopped talking. I don't want to know, Chief. Just move the stuff back upstairs, pronto. Comprendi? Leo said, smiling. Okay, you got it, the chief said somewhat resignedly. Okay, move it. Leo out. Leo ended the conversation and tossed the comm panel back to Yoshida, who was about to say something but got interrupted by the PA. Attention! If you don't outrank me, and as everybody on board except the first mate and the captain, report back to the engineering on the double. You got 5 minutes. The chief's voice came booming over the intercom. Chief is getting soft. He gave him a whole 5 minutes, Yoshi observed, calmly sipping his mug of coffee. Well, we are on R&R, you know, Leo said, putting his feet up on the chair opposite him. All members of the crew came out of their cabins and ran back towards engineering. Yoshida leaned back in his chair and replied, Any ideas what you want to do over the next couple of days? Lee already had an answer to this and smiled. Do you think we can get a game of volleyball together? Chapter 22. Leo, we are 250 meters away from the digger, Yoshida said mechanically. Okay, laying a course for the Endurance. Take your time. We don't have to report in till 2000 hours tonight, Leo responded. Course laid in. We should be docking position in about 10 hours. Right. Leo toggled the comm link, got the PA channel. Everyone, run a level 5 diagnostic on your equipment. Do some drills, then meet me in the lounge in 1 hour. I'm going to pass out some information. Leo ran the diagnostic program through his systems, then ran the operating schematics through Larry. Everything looked normal and within established ranges. Leo ran through the information he was going to present to the guys one more time, make sure that all the diagrams were in the proper order. Then Leo sent a coded message to Larry for a check. Larry sent back the appropriate code to let Leo know that all was going as previously planned. The hour passed uneventfully as all the diagnostics were run and reported back to Leo, who diligently noted the information in the maintenance logs that he would have to turn over to the technicians on the Endurance, and more specifically to Faith, whom he had not seen in 3 months. Leo wondered how she was doing, if she was looking forward to seeing him. The last time they had been together, both of them were tired and irritable from their non-stop schedules, and they had snapped at each other while trying to have a nice dinner in one of their mess halls. The whole fight was about whether or not to eat in the dining hall or in Leo's quarters. Leo wanted to eat out and see some different faces, while Faith wanted to eat in and not see any familiar faces. It was a silly thing to fight about, really, but Leo had left without saying goodbye, even though he saw her right before they cleared the Endurance. Maybe he could say he was sorry in some way. Maybe he would have some flowers replicated. Leo looked over at the clock on the display and realized it was time to brief the guys. Okay, everyone meet me in the lounge at 5. Gutenberg, you on the bridge. You can keep the monitor going so you can see and hear the briefing, Leo said. Leo unbuckled himself in the chair and made his way down to the lounge, grabbing a Diet Coke as he did. He then perched himself backwards on a chair and watched the guys file in and take their seats. All right, everyone comfortable? Leo asked, knowing the response. If nothing else, these guys excelled at being comfortable. There was a general murmuring of yes, so Leo continued. Good. I hope everyone is rested because I expected in a couple hours we'd be giving new marching orders and sent out for more patrolling. This news brought more moans from the crew, but Leo could tell the guys were well rested due to the volume. If they were tired, there'd hardly be a peep from them. Okay. I called you down here to tell you something about the situation with the fleet. Something I learned while doing a little research and talking to Captain Clark. The crew was interested now, so Leo decided to move into his presentation. He explained Defensive Line Wolf and the fact it was almost completed. He explained that there were actually 3 lines, the other 2 had yet to be completed. The first was obviously Wolf with its sensor nets and automated defense systems and all the rest. Line Wolf would be patrolled by three squadrons, each assigned to a different sector with some overlapping areas of responsibility. The second line, which was called Bear, was located just behind Wolf. Making up Bear would be the Admiral's ship and a squadron. And these 2 elements would make up the Quick Reaction Force, the QRF, which would be dispatched to any sector of the Wolf that developed the problem. The third line, designated Cougar, was the support area, made up of the support squadron and the 5th and final combat squadron. This squadron's job was to act as reserve for the QRF and to protect the support squadron. Since this combat squadron was located in the rear, it would also be time for rest and retraining. Leah looked over the crew to see if everyone was getting the information. He noticed Verde was looking confused. "Pablo, you got a question?" Leo asked, the cowboy from Venezuela. "Yeah, maybe I'm jumping ahead of you, but do you mean to tell me we're going to be out patrolling for 3 months at a time?" "Good question. I was just about to get to that. The squadron will be rotating their positions, but it will be a monthly basis. 1 month patrol, 1 month QRF, 1 month patrol, 1 month support, 1 month patrol. I know this means that at some point we'll be pulling patrol duty for 2 months straight, but at least we'll be in different sectors of Wolf, and sometimes it'll be stationary. Other times it'll be mobile patrol, so it won't be as bad as sitting still for a month." "Does that answer your question, Pablo?" Leo asked, looking back to the ranger. "Sir, yes sir, clear sir," Pablo said, in a shouting military voice, which earned him a barrage of pillows from the crew, which is a typical response to annoying people in the briefing. "Okay, okay, take it easy," Leo said, knowing for sure that the crew was in a good mood. "But as of this point, I do not know where the second squadron will be placed. Myself, I'd kind of like to be in either the QRF or the support position. God knows we could use the rest." The crew murmured agreement to this. "Right now, though, as we all know, we are headed towards the Endurance to have the ship checked out by the techs." Leo heard Fia snort at this. He did not like the job the digger techs had done and was looking forward to the certified techs handling the machinery. "And hopefully a few more days' rest, in which maybe we can challenge a few teams from the Endurance to some volleyball." "Sounds good to me. After that warm-up on the digger, we're ready for them." Other murmurs of excitement echoed around the cabin. "Good. As soon as we land, Packer set up some games. We'll see if we can gain some bragging rights." Packer nodded and said something to his wingman in a low tone. Logan just nodded without changing his expression. Typical, Leo thought. Those two had all kinds of secrets between them. "Okay now, gentlemen," I use the term loosely. This got a few groans from the men who were used to the old joke like this. "Before we land," Leo consulted his watch, "approximately 5 hours, I want you all to break out your weapons, both hand and projectile, and run the gauntlet once." A great deal of moaning from the crew. "And if I don't like the scores, we will run it again. Be back at your ready positions in 5 minutes from now." Leo's hand dropped to show the clock was running. The crew scattered from the room to their individual cabins. Leo had placed all the gear in his small backpack and stored underneath one of the nearby seats for this very occasion. Leo laughed as he strapped on his gun belt, hearing the crew yelling at each other to get out of the way or trying to figure out where something was. Leo then slipped into his combat vest, then held up his extra weapons and magazine, notably his twin size. The gauntlet was something Leo had designed himself to keep the crew sharp and on their toes. It simulated a target range, with Larry's help. The gauntlet was a series of stations set up around the ship, in landing bays and hallways. A person had to move to each station. A target would appear on the floor, wall, or ceiling. The goal was to hit the target within the shortest time frame. There were 12 stations set up throughout the entire ship, with different targets presenting themselves at each, such as the heavy-duty droid robots having to be tagged with a handheld weapon at a specific point on their outer casing in order to deactivate them. Sometimes the robots would charge, sometimes run away, and sometimes stand still with their backs to them, armed with a stun gun. The only constant in the gauntlet was this 12 starting positions. The men would report to the areas more than once, but they never knew which angle or type of threat they had to neutralize. To say the least, it kept people on their toes, including Leo. Larry was the only one who knew what was coming at each station. Leo adjusted his comlink and switched to the PA channel, looked at his watch, and realized there were only 10 seconds left on his deadline. "Okay, my stinky comrades, are we ready to begin? Everyone got training loads and a weapon?" Leo counted 11 affirmative answers, and also positive answers from Larry, Winchester, Fee, Fi, Fo, and Fum, as well as the two heavy maintenance droids, Felix and Oscar. "Lock and load," Leo ordered over his comm link, matching his own actions to the words. "Watch your lane," Leo announced. These were the code words that activated the gauntlet. Leo heard the buzz before he saw the little droid. It whooshed by his head, clearing it by about 5 inches. Leo drew his sidearm, fired, missing with the first and second shot, but tagging the little droid with a harmless beam of light with the third pull of the trigger. The little droid stopped in flight and settled softly on the deck near a wall. Leo checked his area for other targets, then holstered his weapon and waited for Larry to send him to the next station on the gauntlet. After the third run of the gauntlet, Leo was satisfied the crew was still in pretty good shape, even after spending the last several months in space. They could still fight standing up, as opposed to fighting in space, which occurred in either a cockpit or gun turret. Leo recalled the crew to the lounge, went over the results of the three run courses, and dismissed them all for showers and packing of gear. The landing on the Endurance was similar to the 100 or so other landings they had done with the Clooney, throwing a twist in as always. He ordered them to land with instruments only. All exterior views shut down. Yoshi and Moon had to have perfect coordination with each other to do it. Leo and DeClooney were not to be let down. Moon and Yoshida had been working on this very technique and landed without foible or fumble. Picture perfect. Then getting called to the Endurance's commander's cabin was nothing new either. Usually DeClooney was too busy to come down to the landing bay to greet the crews. Leo was prepared when he went to DeClooney's cabin. He took with him the hand-rolled cigars from Captain Clark. Clark had rushed the cigars to Leo right before the Lion had detached from the digger. It seems that Clark had one of his crew members, a man originally from Cuba, had set up a small-scale tobacco plantation on the Star Digger. This came from Clark and the Cuban's experience back on Earth, whose families were both predominant tobacco growers. Leo presented the box of hand-rolled cigars to DeClooney when he was standing in front of him, reporting as ordered. "Fine tobacco," DeClooney stated, waving it under his nose as if smelling the cork from a bottle of wine. "Captain Clark hoped you would like it," Leo stated, with a smile on his face. "Ah, well, I shall have to think of an appropriate thank you to that very gifted gentleman," DeClooney said, placing his cigar back in the handcrafted case Leo had brought him. "But I shall have to do that another time," closing case, then turning his full attention to Leo. "Captain Grant, I see from your reports that you have been living at a slightly higher gravity and reduced oxygen level." "Yes, sir. It would seem an appropriate thing to do in order to keep them in fighting trim," Leo answered. DeClooney turned towards the comm panel, mounted on his desk. "I see. And how are your gauntlet drills going?" "Good, sir. No real discernible depreciation in skills since we left Sanctuary, but I like more unit training time," Leo said, not sure where all this is going. Usually DeClooney did not talk about training unless it was going badly. "Good, good. And how about your primary shark pilots? Have they been staying up on all their skills?" DeClooney asked, again, without looking up. "Yes, sir. Everything is going fine. In fact, Logan and Packer have been exceeding fleet standards on their drills by an average of 25% in all areas." Now Leo was really confused. DeClooney had all this information from the line right in front of him. Was this another test? "Well, I have something to ask you. I usually don't like to ask. I like to tell. But this has come straight down from the Admiral himself, so I will follow his prescribed format," DeClooney said, looking at Leo. Leo thought this was the most uncomfortable he had ever seen the man. "Well, I should get right to the point. The Admiral would like a ship, a volunteer ship, because the mission is uncertain. There is no way to tell the outcome of it." DeClooney had regained his composure and was barreling on ahead. "The mission calls for a long-range recon ship to go deep into Alarian territory. That is all I can say about it right now. If a ship volunteers and is selected, the Admiral himself will fill you in on the details." Leo was shocked, but also intrigued about what the mission was. But at the same time, he wasn't too interested in going anywhere near Alarian territory, let alone deep into it. But on second thought, it might get him out of doing patrols for a while. DeClooney continued, "I myself don't know anything more about it, otherwise I would share the information with you. But let me tell you now, Leo, you are my first choice from the 15 ships under my command. I have not made this announcement to the rest of the captains. I want to do my best to get first crack at it," DeClooney said, smiling at Leo with a look of pride on his face. "Captain, I will have to think about this. Do I have any time, or do I have to give you the answer right away?" Leo asked. "The sooner I get the answer, the better," DeClooney stated dryly. "Well, sir, I really hate to make a decision like this without having more information, but I guess the Admiral has his reasons. So against my better judgment, I will volunteer both myself, my crew, and my ship for the mission," Leo said, hoping he was not making a mistake. "Good. Now then, if you'll excuse me, I need to call the squadron commander so that he can call the Admiral." Leo stood at this and walked out of the cabin. Once outside, he leaned against the wall, hoping he had not made a very big mistake. Chapter 23, 2 November, 21:51. The shuttle hummed a little louder, and Leo could feel the small ship leave the deck and begin to taxi towards the hangar bay exit. Leo made himself comfortable as the autopilot took over, and Leo began checking the readouts on his panels. Accompanying them, and standing behind the commander, was his personal general-purpose droid. Leo had wanted to take Yoshi and Abe along on the trip, but the rules of the briefing had been clear. No one but Leo was authorized to attend. It had been 2 months since de Clooney had called Commander Fisher and told him that the Arrogant Lion was the volunteer ship from the squadron. Commander Fisher had called back de Clooney and gave him a month-long training schedule that was meant to hone the crew even further, and for some reason that Leo could not understand, the schedule called for a great deal of hand-to-hand combat drills, as well as individual personal weapons practice. Leo and his crew could only guess why this was, and there were many theories, from an assassination attempt on the Alarian Emperor to a secret raid on the Alarian Bank. The crew had speculated and drilled, and guessed and drilled. With every 7th day set aside for rest, and with the rest came a landing on the Endurance, if they were not already there. That was where the line was currently, on the Endurance with the crew kicking back, while Leo was headed towards the flagship of the fleet, the Redemption. 60 minutes till we are within range of the Redemption, Leo stated. Thank you, Captain, Commander Fisher replied, not looking up from his comm panel. The shuttle had been in flight for an hour now, and hardly any words had been passed between the three of them. Leo continued checking the panels, and occasionally read from his comm panel. Currently, he was engrossed in Earth's space history. He was up to 2150 and the colonization of the moon, and all the problems involved with colonizing an airless planetoid with less than Earth normal gravity. He had just read a footnote about the similarity of problems of the colonization process, as anticipated by a science fiction novel called Red Mars. When Leo looked up and forward again, there she was, the Redemption, the biggest and most powerful ship in the fleet. Leo had never seen her in space, and only once on the ground. There she had been awesome. Here in space, she was magnificent. It was larger than anything else in the fleet, and as wide at her tapered bow and stern as the Endurance was long. Leo knew that she had the firepower of an entire squadron, and then some, at her disposal. She was so huge, it was said it would take a lifetime to visit every single room, corridor, and closet on board. Leo was pretty sure that was an exaggeration, but it did go a very long way toward describing how big she was. Another rumor floating around the fleet was the ship had more than one positronic brain, and it had, in fact, almost a family of positronic brains that assisted the crew and personnel of almost 4,000 in running ship. Leo was not sure about this. Heck, maybe it was true. He knew Larry sometimes had a hard time keeping track of the exact mass and specific gravity of the Lion every second of every day, so that when the time came, the calculations for hyperspace could be completed without taking a complete inventory of the ship. Maybe Leo could find out whether some of the rumors were true or not on this trip to the big ship. Leo looked out the viewport of the ship and was rewarded with a view of 2 gunships leaving one of the hangars and entering space. The gunships dived once they were about 200 meters from the huge ship and turned back underneath the huge ship, dissecting the ship in two. About halfway up the beam of the ship, the two ships split up, one coming in the general direction of the shuttle, the other lost on the far side of the flagship. Leo lost track of both ships at the point where his attention was caught by 4 sharks coming in for a landing on one of the mid-level landing bays on the ship laid out in front of them. Shuttle 527, this is Redemption Flight Control. Please send crew manifest and final identification codes, came a voice over the speakers in the shuttle. Roger, Flight Control. Sending information now, Leo answered efficiently. After a few seconds, the voice came back. Shuttle 527, this is Flight Control. You are cleared to land on Landing Deck 1, Runway 4. Please lock onto our navigation beacon on Fleet Frequency 1523. Roger, Leo replied while adjusting the navigation computer. We have a lock on the frequency. Shuttle 527, proceed according to the nav beacon, and welcome to the Redemption. Flight Control out. 5 minutes later, the shuttle was approaching the top landing deck of the Redemption. Leo marveled at the amount of traffic landing on the tail side of the ship. 5 landing decks with multiple runways on each of them. Leo counted at least 5 other ships that would be landing at the same time. He counted double that in approach patterns behind them. The ship had to have more than one positronic brain. Heck, it would have to have at least one controlling the landings and one for the takeoffs. Leo landed the shuttle without incident and coasted along to a spot motioned by the crew member wearing an all-yellow jumpsuit. Immediately following the shutdown procedure, Leo activated the door mechanism, which opened with a barely discernible hum. Commander Fisher was the first one out the door and was immediately greeted by a droid. Leo recognized it as a personal assistance droid of the same model the commander had brought with him. The droid stood there motionless until Leo appeared behind the commander. "Greetings, Commander Fisher. Welcome back to the Redemption," the droid replied in a precise British accent. "Good to be back, Marcus," the squadron commander said, then motioned to Leo. "Marcus, I would like you to meet Captain, Junior Grade, Leo Grant of the Arrogant Lion." The robot nodded towards Leo. "And of course you remember my personal aide, Sylvester?" Again the nod, but this time with a short burst of light from one droid to the other. Leo had learned from Winchester this was a high-speed communication from one droid to the next, and could contain anything from a multiple-word salutation to recipes for a human's favorite food. Leo had once, while on the Endurance, rigged his comm panel to translate some of the flashes of light, and was promptly bored in 5 minutes with a meaningless dribble that was passed back and forth. One burst of light discussed in depth and in great detail a spill of cleaning fluid that was on the deck down one of the corridors. He stopped eavesdropping after about 5 minutes when the exact chemical composition of the spill was explained to the fourth robot in a row. "Well, Marcus, when do we meet with the Admiral?" Commander Fisher asked. "The Admiral would like to meet with you immediately, and he will send for Captain Grant after talking to you." "Okay, then. Why don't you lead us up towards the headquarters, and you can drop the captain off in the lounge?" "As you wish, Commander. If you would all follow me, I will take you to the officer's lounge first, and then continue on," Marcus said, turning abruptly and striding towards the elevator. Leo followed the commander on his left side, and bringing up the rear was the droid Sylvester. Once on board the elevator, Marcus's comm light flashed briefly, and the conveyance started to move. At first, it was in an upwards direction. Then, after what seemed like a couple of decks, the elevator slowed and started to move in what Leo guessed was towards the front of the ship. This is always disconcerting to Leo, even though he had rode in these multi-directional elevators a few times. Where he was from, elevators only went up and down. Then the thing started to go up again. When they arrived at their final destination, they got out and continued their procession for about 25 yards. Then he was directed by Marcus to make himself comfortable in the officer's lounge through a set of double doors, as Marcus, Commander Fisher, and Sylvester continued on down the corridor. Leo pushed open the doors and knew immediately he had entered into an elitist officer's country. The room was done in wood floors, wood paneling, and real wood furniture. The bar was a deep dark wood, maybe mahogany, with a brass rail running the length of it. The place was lit with small recessed lighting that made the harsh shadows in some areas along the walls and some of the half walls where there were plants, mostly ferns. In the background, some faint piano music was heard. The music could easily be heard, because beside himself there was no one in the bar. Leo hated the place immediately. He walked slowly up to the bar and ordered a Coke from the robot bartender, who was a common fixture on all the bars in every ship Leo had been in so far. After ordering, he found a booth along one of the walls and sat down, pulling out his comm panel in the process. He had just gotten comfortable with his feet propped up on the seat he was on, his back towards the booth wall, when the double doors opened wide and about 20 people walked in. Leo immediately picked out their ranks. Not one of them was anything less than a senior lieutenant, and they were all dressed exactly alike. In fact, they all looked alike. They all had short hair, including the women. They all had neatly pressed uniforms, and not one of them wore a weapon in a combat holster, but in a black leather holster with a flap over the pistol butt. The newcomers started to sit down at tables around them, and the bar became a bit louder. They occasionally looked over at Leo and whispering comments to each other. Leo tried to ignore the whispering, but after a few minutes it became annoying. Finally, Leo had enough, so he turned around in his chair and tapped the closest female on the shoulder. "Excuse me," Leo said in the friendliest tone he could manage, trying not to let his irritation come through. "Yes, sir," the man turned around. Leo noted the man was a junior captain like himself. "Yeah, as you have probably guessed, I'm new around here and was wondering if you folks get many visitors." The man turned towards his two companions, two females, one a Chief Warrant Officer 3, the other a Senior Lieutenant, and shot them dirty looks. Then he turned back towards Leo. "Sorry, Captain. I guess we don't get many visitors around here, and when we do, they're usually senior officers." "Oh, I see," said Leo, understanding the situation better. And when the visitors too come to our lounge, they usually don't put their feet up on the furniture, the warrant officer stated, jumping into the conversation. Leo was about to take his feet down from the long padded bench, but then he decided not to. And all the officers keep their hair short, as required by ship regulations, added the red-headed senior lieutenant. Leo laughed at this and pulled out his ponytail from underneath his vest. Well, I don't abide much by other ship's regulations. I'm my ship. I keep things a little bit looser, Leo said with a smirk on his face. You have your own ship? Said the red-haired lieutenant, starting to turn red in her face with embarrassment. Sure do. What squadron and type, Captain? The other captain asked with a hint of a challenge. Second squadron, long-range recon ship, 12, but I just call her the Arrogant Lion. After this answer, the two girls asked Leo to sit at their table, which he did. After a few minutes, the other captain left abruptly. The girls explained he had asked them here on sort of a date, but they were not sure which one of them he was interested in. The girl asked him questions for a while, then one of them got a call on her comlink, and they both had to leave. Leo got another soda and tried to talk to the bartender droid in the changing the music. After getting nowhere for 10 minutes, Leo wondered, sort of speculated really, if Winchester could talk the other droid into changing the sappy music. Kind of a moot point, since Winchester was not here. Sitting back down at his original table, Leo started reading again, did not even notice the second squadron commander until he tapped him on the shoulder. Yes, sir, Leo said, turning around and almost spilling his soda in the process. We need to go meet the Admiral now, Captain. Let's go, the small Malaysian man said. Yes, sir. Following the commander, they took several turns down various hallways, and finally Commander pulled Leo aside. Captain, I have to warn you. When we enter the Admiral's area, make no sudden movements, and keep your hands away from your weapons. Leo was puzzled, and it must have showed on his face to the commander. The outfit has assigned the Admiral 5 bodyguards, some very antisocial people who take their job very seriously. The commander nodded his head slowly. Well, the Admiral was going to get rid of them, assign them down to the Marines. But then one night, after our first hyperspace jump, some lunatic technician wanders up to the Admiral and tries to stab him. Luckily, one of the bodyguards got between the Admiral and the knife, and the other bodyguards jumped the guy. The guy started shouting something about the Admiral being Satan. He was later diagnosed with hyperspace psychosis and is currently being looked after. How come we never heard about this? Leo said, wondering out loud. The commander faced Leo fully and nodded. Well, the only people there were the Admiral, 3 squadron commanders, and the bodyguards. So it was easy to keep quiet, which I expect to stay that way, he said, looking very serious as Leo nodded. So the Admiral decided to keep the bodyguards at the urging of us squadron commanders. Leo murmured in agreement. Just thought I'd warn you beforehand. One guy came up to the Admiral too quick over in the 4th squadron. Let me just say, he won't be doing that anymore, the commander said. Leo nodded his head, and they started walking again. They walked for a few minutes and made their way up a ramp. At the top, they entered a slightly narrow doorway that only allowed one person through at a time. As Leo followed the commander through, he thought he felt a slight tingling on his skin and wasn't really sure he felt it after a second. Leo looked around the doorway and noticed a small scanner wire running around the doorway. Leo wondered if the bodyguards had installed it. They continued down the hallway and passed through another door, which closed tightly behind them. And Leo thought he heard a click as if the door locked. A few minutes further on, they came upon a set of double doors which opened in front of the commander. Leo found himself on a slightly elevated step in a very nice-looking room, done almost completely in wood, including the walls. But instead of the officer's bar, which was done in dark tones, this room was much lighter. The centerpiece in the room was a large oval-shaped table with large leather chairs surrounding it. On the far side of the table sat the Admiral. On either side of them were 2 commanders, whom Leo did not recognize. Directly behind the Admiral, but near the rear wall of the room, was a huge white man with a shaved head, wearing black body armor. 2 bandoliers of ammunition and 2 hilts of samurai swords rising up from behind the man's shoulders. Leo knew from Yoshida that these swords could be drawn quickly if needed, even though they were strapped to the user's back and looked to be out of reach. Leo was pretty sure this was one of the bodyguards he had been warned about. Leo noticed that on the opposite side of the room stood the 2 droids, the one assigned to Commander Fisher and the one named Marcus who had met them in the hangar bay. The commander walked down the 3 wooden stairs that separated the slightly higher platform from the main floor. Admiral, may I present Captain Junior Grade Leo David Grant from the Long Range Recon Ship, 12. also known as the Arrogant Lion. "Greetings, and welcome to the Redemption, Captain Grant," the Admiral said in a very precise British Indian accent while standing and extending his hand. Leo nodded and shook the man's hand, who shook it with firmness and strength while his blue-green eyes showed confidence. Taller in person than he looks on the comm screens, Leo thought. "Gentlemen, please have a seat," the Admiral said as he regained his own, motioning for them to do so as well. The commander sat down directly across from the Admiral, Leo to the commander's right. "Now then, let me first introduce you to my staff. On my right is Chief of Staff Commander Leroy St. James, and on my left, my second in command, Commander Jonathan Wasbowski." The two commanders nodded politely, and Commander Wasbowski crossed his arms and leaned back in his chair, while Commander Leroy St. James leaned forward, put his elbows on the table, and steepled his hands together. Leo had the distinct impression that the two commanders were at odds about something, and this meeting was part of the ongoing fight. Commander St. James was a thin black man with a stern-looking face, who appeared to be serious most of the time, while Commander Wasbowski was powerfully built, with thick arms and a thick neck, contrasted by thin, short hair on top of his head. Leo guessed them both to be about 30 years old. "I am sure, Captain Grant, you and your crew are wondering why the secrecy concerning this mission you volunteered for over a month ago." "Yes, sir, we were wondering about the particulars," Leo answered, not sure if the Admiral was speaking rhetorically or not. "Well, let me start with saying that the reason you were asked to volunteer a month ago was because a debate has been going on in these very chambers as to whether or not the mission was to proceed at all." He motioned around the room. "But I have since then come to a decision that this mission is vital to the protection of Earth and should be completed, and it has also taken me this long to pick the right ship and personnel to complete the mission." The Admiral paused here and looked at his two officers on either sides of him. Commander Wasbowski just nodded gravely, and Commander St. James allowed a slight smile to cross his otherwise stern face. "After careful consideration for a variety of factors, I've decided that the Arrogant Lion and her crew are going to transport Commander Wasbowski to a high-ranking Alarian official and attempt to open a dialogue for a possible peace treaty between the Earth and the Horde." Lee's mouth dropped open at the same time as Commander St. James. Lee was awestruck. From what he had read about the Horde, and more importantly the Alarians, there was not a snowball's chance in a Georgia July that a peace treaty could be reached. The Alarians had never signed a peace treaty in their entire interstellar history, or even in their own planetary history. Leo hadn't even considered this a possible mission. "Admiral, I assumed that since we were going to go ahead with the mission, that I'd be the one to go," St. James said, turning toward the Admiral, with a look of utter surprise on his face. The Admiral turned towards his Chief of Staff. "Leroy, I have my reasons, and even though you initially proposed this, I have decided to send Jonathan. I will talk to you about it later." It looked to Leo that the commander was going to say something, but then he thought better and turned back towards the center of the table and regained a neutral, if not slightly uncomfortable, expression on his face. Admiral again turned back towards Leo. "Captain, I would like you and your ship ready to go in 3 weeks. Will that be possible?" "Yes, sir, that is more than enough time," Leo answered, knowing that he could be ready within the hour if so needed. "Very good. Commander Wasbowski will be joining you on board the..." And the Admiral looked down at the comm screen mounted on the table. "Endurance. At 2300 hours on the 28th, you will then leave the fleet on a course the commander makes known to you at that time. You will maintain energy level 7 for most of your journey, with scanners and sensors at level 8. When you reach your destination, your two sharks will go into orbit until the completion of the mission. In the event you and the Lion are captured or destroyed, they will make their way back to the fleet with the information. After the completion of your mission, you are to return to the fleet using a different route, under energy level 4 or lower. Once you make contact with the fleet, you and your crew are to return to the Redemption, make a full report of your activities, including a complete download of your sensor and scanner logs." The Admiral looked over his screens once more. Leo's mind was reeling. What had he volunteered for? "All aspects of this mission are to remain classified until I or one of the personnel in this room give you permission to talk about it openly. As for the rest of the crew, they are not to be told the details until you have the commander on board and you have left Defensive Line Wolf. Do you understand these orders, Captain Grant?" "Yes, sir," Leo said, understanding, but being overwhelmed at the same time. "Commander Fisher, Contact Captain Grant's commander and inform him of the needs placed on the Arrogant Lion. Commander Fisher responded quickly with a yes, sir, of his own. Captain Grant, do you have any questions at this time? The Admiral asked, smiling now. No, sir. No questions, sir. Commander Wasbowski, do you have any orders or requests of Captain Grant at this time? Well, the Polish officer began, leaning forward in his seat slightly. I cannot think of anything right now. Just don't change around your operations too much, Captain, and don't make any special allowances for me. Besides that, just make sure you are fully locked and loaded and ready to go. Yes, sir, Leah responded quickly. Okay, then, Captain Grant, you can go now. I have a few things I need to discuss with Commander Fisher. Leo got up and walked towards the door. When he turned to go back towards the door, he found another menacing bodyguard standing there. This one was a muscular black man with a shaved head, but also having a very distinctive mustache and goatee. This one was wearing body armor as well, two bandoliers across his chest, and a double set of mag blasters on each hip. The man eyed him like a man looking over a bug to be stepped on, then stepped out of the way, slowly. Leo found his way back down the corridors and into the officer's club. This time, when the robot bartender came up to him and asked him what he wanted, he ordered a shot and a beer.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Scouts Out by A.A. Foringer, as read by the author. This audio production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. A new episode of Scouts Out is released every Saturday. To get an ebook version of this story, go to smashwords.com, where you can find other stories in the Outfitters universe. The story you have just listened to may contain slight variations from the original text due to translation from written word to spoken word, but overall, the story has not been changed. To contact Aaron, visit his blog at aaforinger.com or email him at aaforinger@gmail.com. He is also on Twitter as aaforinger. He craves your feedback, so get to the comm link of your choice and commence with the typing.